Well, this new book is called When Dave Went Up, the inside story of Wimbledon's FA Cup 1988 win. I spoke to author Gary Jordan yesterday afternoon and started by asking him if, obviously, this book was coming out to coincide with the anniversary.
I mean, it kind of made sense with the 35th anniversary. We tried to get it out for last week, but for different reasons, it's going to come out a little bit after. So that was the main reason. Obviously, 35 is a bit of an odd number for an anniversary, but it's a round number, better than 33. So, yeah, that kind of made sense in that respect.
Was this a book you'd always wanted to write? Because this isn't the first book you've written about Wimbledon.
No, it wasn't one that leapt off the page, so to speak. The first book that I've written about Wimbledon was about the return to Plough Lane, which was 30 years in the making. So again, a nice round number there. So that was the first one. Obviously, I had a lot of interest with obviously all the backstory that had, and obviously getting fans involved in that, because it was very much a fan-led project that got Wimbledon off the ground all those years ago. And it was sort of a continuation of that. And obviously it needed a story to back it up. So that was the first book, Show Me the Way to Plough Lane. And then, as most writers do, you have the sort of like tangents that you go off and find other stories that come off that. So this seemed like a natural progression from that book.
It's a story that we think we're all familiar with, isn't it? I think there are certain moments in that FA Cup final that we think we all know very well. So we know that Lloris Sanchez scores a goal. We know that Dave Besant is going to save a penalty.
Yep. So, yeah, there are key moments, obviously, like you say, that stand out. And obviously, I think another one may be the introduction was with Princess Diana, Princess of Wales at the time. So that was quite a key spotlight or moment on the club and obviously the world watching. Yeah, the goal, the penalty save, those are the two key moments. But I felt it wasn't just about the final itself, because, like, again, if you looked at Wimbledon winning the FA Cup, you'd find that as a story. But there was so much to tell behind that. So what I've tried to do in the book is obviously go round by round, because each game leading up to the final had its own sense of drama as well.
And not actually even round by round of that year, because I think you try to make a point in the book that this wasn't the first time that sort of Wimbledon has surprised teams in the FA Cup.
No, obviously the book, again, with Wimbledon, with their history, and obviously very short history in the league at the time, it was worth telling some backstory. And obviously with Wimbledon, they come to real prominence across the nation in the mid-70s, still as a non-league side. And they made a very famous run in the mid-70s, 1975, where they held what was going to be then the eventual European Cup finalist, Leeds United, to a draw, famously saving a penalty late on in that game. Terms for replay, which they unfortunately lost at Selhurst Park. So that really put the Dons on the map in terms of the FA Cup. And going from there, you fast forward a decade, and they had sort of their mini runs like most teams do at that level. Until it was their first season actually in the top flight, where they got to the quarterfinals. And it was almost like a perfect precursor to what was going to happen the following year. And on their way, on their journey there, they beat league champions Everton 3-1, only to be knocked out by Tottenham in the quarterfinals. But like I say, it was a good dress rehearsal for what was going to come the following year.
Things changed, though, during that period. And of course, you know, it's significantly a change of manager.
Yes, again, that's worth highlighting, the fact that obviously Dave Bassett had done an excellent job bringing the team up as quickly as he did, and the way he did that with the players that he had, and obviously again that's another story you could almost tell on its own, that period of coming up through the leagues. But he left, and obviously Bobby Gould come in with fairly big shoes to fill, and to try and manage this squad, which had just ridden this huge wave into the first division, finished sixth against all the odds, just keep churning these results out, which were for a club like Wimbledon, which was unheard of. Everyone thought obviously they were on to go down straight away, but no, they kept going. So Gould stepped in, had the task of obviously keeping those players on board, keeping their feet on the ground, and pushing one step further, which obviously he famously did.
Don Howe, also a very important appointment.
Yeah, that was probably the key to the actual success of that whole cup run. And I think Bobby Gould actually said himself that was his best signing at the time. To get someone of Don Howe's, what he achieved in his own career as a player, coach, to get him on board was a masterstroke. And if you associate the Wimbledon of then, having someone like him come on board, you think that's absolutely crazy. And I think that's obviously what he was trying to sell at the time. Bobby Gould himself said to sell this to Don Howe was almost like, I don't expect him to say yes, so let's just roll the dice and go with it. But on the first day he arrived, he was mixing in with the lads and got on well with them straight away. So I think that's the key, really. Once you've got the players on side and actually like you're one of them, that's a huge thing.
How easy was that to do, I wonder? And also, there was seen as a Wimbledon way of playing as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, which obviously does go completely against what Don Howe was used to. I wouldn't say Don Howe was much old school in the way he would approach games, because the way he could adapt the system, the way he adapted himself, as well as obviously adapting the system that Wimbledon had, and used the tools that he had. It was very much a case of obviously how understanding what motivated the players. And like I say, if he could get them on side and prove that he was just as much with them, at the same time, keeping that rein so they don't go completely wild, that was quite important. So, yeah, it was the best signing that he made during that off season.
So who in particular were you keen to hear from and share the stories of when it came to this book? Because it feels, when it comes to the players, you've got, I think, most of the key kind of protagonists. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously important to get the goal scorer and to get Laurie Sanchez's view on things. And likewise, Dave Besson, the captain of the club that had been there through the whole rise as well. It's important to get these players that not just were there for that one season, but throughout that whole period. So they could share not just their experiences of that cup run, but what it was like to actually come up through the leagues and that sense of this is what we're all about. And it wasn't just, yes, obviously the cup win was the final part of the jigsaw, but for players like Besson and for Sanchez, it was very much, I've done my bit now. And I think obviously that obviously leads on to the fact that Besson was then sort of not free to go, but he'd done his bit with the club, and the club owed him the fact that if he wanted to go on and do other things, then that was fine. Obviously with the summer break, another important move was to get Terry Gibson on board, which was a perfect fall for John Fashanu. Fashanu had already made his name as a Wimbledon legend in the two or three seasons before, but we needed a foil for him, and Gibson was one of these players that his career started at Spurs, Coventry, where he probably made his name, Manchester United, where it didn't pay off for him at all, and he was waiting for a phone call to take him away from Man United, and that gladly happened for him.
Didn't Bobby Gould have to have a rather interesting meal, though, in order to allow him to the money to buy his players?
Yeah, I think to seal the deal, he had to obviously try and persuade Sam Hammam, the club chairman. And Sam Hammam obviously put him to task and said, well, if you go away and do this special meal, I'm not sure if we can mention it, but yeah, if you want him that badly, go and do that and I'll sign the cheque straight away. And that's what he did, because again, Gould knew that he had to have this player. And when you're on a mission and you're trying to build something, you'll do as much as you can do to get these people on board.
The meal involved, I believe, half a dozen sheep's testicles, which I think Bobby Gould said he just put some vinegar on. So,
yes, I'm not sure if that would help the case. I don't really want to try it myself.
I honestly don't know, and I don't want to know one way or the other whether that was palatable. But he got his man, didn't he? As a consequence of that. It's interesting. You say, I think right at the start of the book, you sort of say, look, some of these memories are slightly different to others. And did you find that to be the case with the people that you spoke to, that maybe they've shared this story quite a few times, and maybe you were getting things out of them that they hadn't shared previously, but also that some of their memories are a bit fuzzy now after 35 years?
Yeah, I mean, that does play into it, because obviously, yeah, you're talking 30, 35 years ago, and obviously a lot has happened since then to the individual players, to the club. It's not like you're staying with the club and you can recall that period at any moment. But what I found was, when speaking to the players and some other people, that some of the stories weren't quite matching up. But again, that centres mostly around the fact the actual cup final day itself and the celebrations and the day after. It was all there, but it wasn't quite matching up. So it was like, well, I'm not going to blame X person for saying that side of the story and this person for saying their side, and it doesn't quite match up, because that's what they remember. And if that's their version of events, then that's fine. There was some conflicts. What I wanted to try and get across was, there was the night before the cup final, there was a little story of obviously the club, the players going out for a drink. And obviously what I wanted to try and clear up the fact that was, it wasn't an all-night session where everyone got drunk, and it wasn't nothing like that. It was a quiet drink. And I think all the players and that side of things, they all said the same thing. It might have been various in the fact that, yes, there was half a dozen of us, or it was the whole team, whatever. But it wasn't a case that went out and got completely drunk.
Yeah, as you say, I think they're all in a hotel together, aren't they? And I think the discussion was, well, what would you do usually? And they decide that they're going to go to a local pub for a drink. And as you say, that all of them say, as what, you know, we did not get drunk, we just went out for a pint. I think a few of them were just on orange juice anyway, because they didn't drink. Although what I thought was interesting is that I think some suggest that Bobby gave them the money, and I think Dave Besson says no.
That's one of the things. Someone said, flat out, that he gave them X amount of money. Someone said he gave this person the money. How it come about is still a little bit maybe unclear. Maybe obviously they're trying to hide someone's blushes a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, the end result, and obviously you touched it there, is the fact that when you're preparing for a game away, and you're travelling away and you're staying away, and you're used to a certain setup, and obviously you room with someone and so forth, that when they're staying in a hotel the night before the cup final, that kind of goes out the window. But the key thing was, again, Gould and Don Howe had them out on the training ground until very late that day, making sure they were prepared. They were drilling the last minute part of the tactics into them, what they wanted to do. And so they spent most of the day actually preparing for the game. Then obviously having their meal, and it was still early evening, so it's like, what could we do now? We're going to sit around, and like, it could get interesting if we don't do something. And that's how that come about.
You say that you wanted to also mark those moments building up to qualifying for the final, and you sort of mentioned the preparations and maybe some of the things that they did. And I thought there was one game, and this may have happened many other times, essentially the players were often asked to make their own way to grounds, weren't they? And I think at one stage Bobby Gould, you know, had some people in a little minivan, and he wasn't allowed in because it wasn't the official team bus.
Yeah, that was the semi-final. So again, obviously a lot of the players live locally, and obviously could make their own way just across London. But those that didn't obviously agreed to go to the minibus. So when the minibus pulled up with Gould as a driver, it obviously looked a bit odd. So they were saying, what's going on here? And he was saying, well, I've got the team here. So, again, that's just the way the Dons did it back then. So that's the style of how they did things.
And that was at White Hart Lane, wasn't it? So
yes.
And was that the match in which Bobby Gould said, I don't need to give you a team talk, because I think a journalist had basically written something basically saying, we don't want Wimbledon to get to an FA Cup final.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I think it was mentioned in the build-up on the actual day itself as well, in the fact that a lot of people just didn't like the way the Dons played. And therefore, to have them grace the FA Cup final and Wembley was a complete disgrace in their eyes. But as Don Howe said after the game, no one's got a given right to play a certain way. If you play this way and you get to the final, or you finish high up in the table, it's on your merits. One journalist said this. To have it in print in the papers, and it did the team talk, because if you have that in print, you can post up onto the dressing room wall and say, look at this, this is what they think of you. Job done, really, because they just look at that and go, if that's what they think, that makes you more determined to go out and do the business.
You understand why they were considered the underdogs, though, against the quality of players and the achievements of that Liverpool side?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, When you look back now, and obviously you have these conversations now, you can say, but you finished 6th, 7th in the league that year. You're beating these teams every other week. So why are you being played down so much? Why is it the shock of the century? Why is it so big? Which, like I say, on reflection now, you can go, that kind of makes sense. But as you've said there, Liverpool at the time were just a machine. They were pretty much like Man City are now. They would just turn up, beat teams 2-3, 4-0 and score for fun. The players they had were all international quality players, world-class players in some of them, that one or two of them would cost the whole of the Wimbledon squad combined. It really was a David and Goliath situation.
It's a hot day as well, isn't it, I think?
Yeah. I looking back, and I wanted to look it up, but I didn't get around to it. I think it might have been the hottest day of that particular year. It was very, very hot. I think, obviously, pitch side, they have different measurements, and I think they said it was touching 100 degrees. So, yeah.
But Kenny Dalglish is still wearing his jacket.
Apparently, that jacket's lucky. But obviously, not on that note. No.
But you sort of describe some of the players, I think, and even the officials, sort of almost being dehydrated by the temperatures.
Yeah, that's something that's picked up on afterwards, in the fact that one of the keys that the players picked up on was on Don Howe's experience of coaching England in World Cups in Spain in 82 and Mexico in 86, and how to deal with extreme heat. So when they come in at half time, he had previously had arranged for ice cold buckets of water with towels in them, and as soon as they come in, put the towels on their heads. So it seemed obviously really odd for the players at the time, but it was a well-dressed tactic that Howe had in mind to combat the heat.
So let's talk about the game itself. And Liverpool do have a goal disallowed. Should it have been disallowed?
No, if I'm truly honest. It's one of those things now where it's very 50-50. The referee at the time, and obviously since afterwards, has said, if I'd had that 5-second hindsight, I probably wouldn't have blown up. But the fact is, it's another thing that went into our favour, in the fact that when you have those moments that go your way, and then soon after you score the goal, and you've got a lead to protect at half-time, you then realise that you can actually win this. So a lot of the actual players realised that beforehand, they had the belief anyway, and now they've actually got a lead to hold on to, knowing that they've got away with one to a certain extent. So now they can actually go into the second half and actually protect that lead.
So that Laurie Sanchez goal, he was in the right place, but it shouldn't have been him, should it? It was a set piece, And it was a training ground move. But Gloris Sanchez knew that somebody else was supposed to be where he ended up being.
That's right. I think it was Alan Cork meant to be in that position. I think there was meant to be three or four in the line as they line up. And obviously Liverpool then obviously come in between each player. And they'd rehearsed it many, many times. But I think it was, it may have been Fashanu actually, and he was on the edge of the box. And Sanchez realised that this person isn't coming into the number three slot, so he better go into that slot. And he was in the right place at the wrong time, so to speak, because he was the one that actually got his head onto it.
With his special haircut as well.
Yep, with his special trim.
And then we come to the penalty. And what's interesting here is that John Motson had been to speak to Dave before the final and had put this to him about the fact that John Aldridge didn't miss penalties. And of course, a goalkeeper had never saved a penalty in an FA Cup final. It's almost as if he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. And I think obviously many commentators will go down and say they don't prepare themselves in terms of obviously saying what they want going to say at those moments. But when you listen back to the commentary now, it's almost as if he's going back through his own notes and remembering what he had actually asked Dave Besant in the build-up to the game, so he could actually come out with the line of, oh, when he saved it, when obviously he does, because he's had this talk with Dave beforehand. And obviously it's interesting the fact that Dave Besant, like most people, most goalkeepers do, will prepare for this type of event. So he also looked at the way Aldridge would take them. So he knew to a certain degree which way he would go. And fortunately, he did.
But there was a penalty earlier, wasn't there, in the FA Cup that season, where he thought he knew what the penalty taker was going to do, but he'd watched the wrong penalty taker.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That was at Mansfield in a game which is probably the most trickiest game out of the whole run. Because obviously lower league pitches, even though obviously Plough Lane wasn't known for its fantastic surface, but the lower league pitches aren't all that great. So it was a very boggy pitch. So it made not for a great game. And yes, they had a penalty late on, which he saved, but he studied again. But the person who he thought was going to be taking the penalty wasn't on the pitch at the time. So even though he obviously thought, oh, that's the way it's going to go, it wasn't the actual person taking the penalty.
So the full-time whistle goes, and I think the sense I get from everybody that you've spoken to is they're just shattered at that point, understandably.
Yeah, obviously we've already mentioned about the weather, that's going to take its toll. But when you are defending for the best part of an hour, that's mentally draining as well. So to keep that up, as well as obviously the extreme conditions, they were pretty much out on their feet. But obviously then you do see the actual celebrations at that point. And I think it's obviously they're just running on empty. And obviously, yeah, the whole excitement of winning the cup takes over.
And the famous commentary, of course, again, from John Motson.
Yes, the crazy gang of being the culture club. It's one of those lines that will always be there. Pretty much like when the cup final day comes around and they show little montage clips of past games. Invariably, you will see the penalty save or the Sanchez goal. And that piece of commentary will always be up there in cup final history.
The celebrations start, although I think they say that by the time they've done their lap of honour, obviously most of the Liverpool fans have cleared out. And then do they have to kick Lulu out of the dressing room at some stage?
Well, obviously
everybody wants a piece of them now.
When it's that situation, they're obviously going to be. I think Lulu was a situation later in the race in the evening where they had a marquee already arranged to be on the Plough Lane pitch, win or lose. Again, it was taken to Besant the fact that what should we do afterwards? And they had the choice of going to a posh hotel, and they sort of said, that's not us. That, you know, what Wilder wants to do that. And the other option was to have family and friends in, on large tables inside the marquee. But as you said, at this point, everyone wants a piece of the winners. So I think it may have been Vinnie Jones that said, what's that person doing there? We can't have them around. So it was very much, obviously, they'd hit the heights, but they still knew who they were and wanted to keep things grounded.
Although I think Laurie Sanchez says, I think his brother celebrated a bit more than he did. I think he just wanted to go to bed, didn't he?
Yeah, again, that long day. And obviously his brother was dining out on the success of obviously having placed a bet on him to be the first goal scorer. So he cashed out on that one. And yeah, he was celebrating long into the night more than actual goal scoring and winning scorer did himself.
So when that full-time whistle goes, how surprised do you think everybody was, including the players, do you think, in what they'd achieved? Or did they always have a belief, I felt, from kind of the interviews that you did?
Yeah, I don't think it was actually surprising the players. They had a belief all along, knowing, obviously, in their own ability as a team, knowing the past results that they've had against big teams, including Liverpool themselves, that they could actually go out and do the business. It was the fact, obviously, convincing everyone else was the problem. And even down to the fans. I mean, obviously, I've heard some fans go, look, if we'd have got beat 4-5, 6-0, at least we got there. And a lot of fans were obviously were just happy to be there. Some were obviously in the opinion, right, well, we're here now on merit, so why not give it a go? So I think the actual surprise really come from outside of the club, in the fact that obviously Wimbledon were expected to just be rolled over 4-5-0 and be embarrassed by this mighty Liverpool team. Rightly so. That's the way it looks. But within the actual team, people around the club, and I'd say probably half the set of fans are like, yeah, we can actually make a good go of this. Why not?
And in the book, you speak to quite a few fans. Were they more optimistic than not?
Again, obviously, I think it's one of those things of reflection, knowing what you know now as has happened. But on the day itself, you hear, obviously, stories of them mixing with the Liverpool fans. And obviously, they're famous for their own humour and banter. Mm-hmm. Walking up Wembley Way, expecting, obviously, almost buying into what the Liverpool fans were saying to them. But the thing is, as well, with Liverpool and their fans, if they know they've been beaten on the day by a team that has deserved to win, they'll quite easily shake your hand and go, you deserve that. And I think that's the feeling you got from a lot of their fans as well coming away, is that the fact that it wasn't their day. Obviously, the disallowed goal, the penalty save, and obviously Wimbledon playing to their strengths, it wasn't their day. A lot of people said it was one game too many for them that season. But I'd like to think of it as the fact that Wimbledon played to their strengths and actually outfought them on that day.
It's interesting because you say about the fans, and I think the players say that they go to Wembley so early that all they see around the ground is red and white of Liverpool fans. Because, of course, the Wimbledon fans don't have as far to travel, so they haven't made the journey quite as early.
Yeah. And again, obviously, being outnumbered in the way they were, that's something that the players pick up on as well. Even on the Liverpool coach, and the fact that it's just a sea of red and white, and where are all the Wimbledon fans? So the fact, obviously, with the ticket allocation and the way the club distributed tickets before the final, where you had to have a voucher. You were given a voucher if you weren't a season ticket holder, which you could then obviously swap over for a ticket. But once wind of that got out, a lot of the Liverpool fans got hold of our tickets in the Wimbledon end as well. So we were vastly outnumbered on the day, and that reflected obviously on the journey up.
The next day, though, to keep to the bus theme, there is a bus for the Wimbledon players, some a bit worse for wear, after their celebrations the night before. But they're initially a little bit concerned that nobody's come out to sort of celebrate with them, that the Wimbledon fans haven't turned up.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things when you're a club that only is averaging 7,000, 8,000 fans as sort of like on hardcore fans, even less really on a proper fan base. You do obviously have that concern. And the route they had planned, very start of the route, there was no one about. Obviously, one man and his dog would be a bit of an exaggeration, but that's the feeling you got. And the closer they got to the town centre, there were a few more people about, and obviously they could start to sense that something was going to happen. But it was only actually when they turned the actual corner onto the main high street that they realised, wow, look at all these people. The people that were there yesterday have actually turned out in force again today. So as much as relief, it was again a good reason to start having a party.
And are there more Wimbledon fans who claim to have been at Wembley on that day than could have possibly been there?
I think you'll find that. I think Laurie Sanchez said that when I spoke to him. The fact that when someone says, "Oh yes, I was there," and you go, "Oh right, so you was one of the 200,000 people that were there on that day, were you?" So yeah.
It does though lead to the breakup of the team, doesn't it? Unfortunately, because what happens is people looked at that Wimbledon squad and thought, "Oh, there are some good players there. We're going to have them in our team. Thank you very much."
Yes, I think it comes to a point where a lot of teams realised that they weren't just a long ball team. There were some very, very good individual players in that side. And like I said before, when you have someone like Dave Besant, who's played for a decade and like has been ever present in the team for that time, it's almost like, well, you've done your job for the club now, so we can't really stand in your way if you want to go elsewhere. And he was one of the first ones to go, one of the first big name players to go. Andy Storne, the young centre-back, he followed soon after as well to Newcastle. So they weren't particularly going to big name teams, the big teams as it were, but they were going to teams in the top flight that obviously wanted to strengthen their own sides, that wanted these cup winners to obviously share their experiences amongst their squads.
As you say, Dave Besant says, if you're going to pick a game to go out on, why not pick the biggest game in football history?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the cup final now isn't perhaps what it used to be. I think it's getting back that way. It's always had some sort of edge to it, but the last decade or so, it has sort of gone away from that. But back then, obviously, the cup final was the actual highlight of the actual football calendar, and everyone played to be in it. So yeah, right, as he says, that wasn't a bad game to go out on.
So how does it feel now to have put all these stories down from these players, from the fans, from the coaches, about an FA Cup that I think even anybody who isn't a Wimbledon or a Liverpool fan always remembers, will know what happened on that day?
Yeah, I think obviously it's fulfilling the fact that obviously to tell a story, so the fans obviously were there and obviously were there even back to the mid-70s. Those fans will recall those days. That's why it was important to get that part of the story in as well, because the fans make the club, and obviously our own club, from what we've been through, the highs of the cup wins and the lows is obviously what happened two decades ago, finding our way back in. The stories are rich and deep, so it's important to obviously get the fans on side with this and obviously have their views put across. And obviously, for the next generation of fans that obviously know about the cup win, will only have heard about it through obviously their parents that may have been there, grandparents. So they can now read about it for themselves and obviously find out what it was like in those times, and obviously from the players themselves.
Well, let's hope there's another FA Cup win in the not-so-distant future, hey?
Oh, that would be lovely. Yeah. We're quite a way off that, but yeah, that would be lovely.